now at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Scott. And folks, though the weather outside is frightful, at least it felt cold. It's not really frightful. But anyway, if you have any questions about what's going on with your plant material, is it going to be damaged by this chilliness? 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly, but right now, just take a look out your window and maybe check your trees. Or how about those perennials? Or is that hillside still eroding away? Shrubs, ground covers, anything planted in your outdoors. Or we can step inside where your house plants that were sitting on the deck, better get them ready to go inside, checking for bugs and problems and things like that before you do bring them inside. And what, you got some dogs, heavy-duty dogs, big dogs that run up and down. What are they causing? Should you be doing any pruning? Do you need to be worrying about insects now that it's getting cooler? Suspicious growth. Can you still do some transplanting? How about taking some cuttings and getting them rooted before the weather really gets cold and stops any kind of in-ground growth? I'll share my knowledge and help you make a good decision. But the action you take is certainly going to be on your shoulders. And this is your show, and I appreciate you having me over to your yard via radio. Another very important player is Drew. He's back. He was in last week in Kansas City, had a great time there, and back producing. So when you call, all he needs is your first name. He'll put it on the computer, and then it comes up on the screen for me to talk to you. And besides our Saturday morning get-together, I can come to your home, into your plant world, for an on-site consultation, a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number. Well, let's get strolling. And this walk is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Ooh, I stepped outside and I'm, you know, thought, well, maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't, but I'm still wearing flip-flops and shorts. Of course, shorts are year-round, regardless of the temperature, but flip-flops. If the temperature's below 50, usually I start wearing socks and shoes, but I thought, first day, who cares? Anyway, I decided to, let's see, what am I going to do? Where should I go for my good gardening stroll on this chilly, beautiful morning? Because it was just starting to get bright. And I mean, that sun was so bright heading east from South City. It was like, wow, a couple times I had to almost pull over because the sun was so bright in my, you know, I guess I should wear sunglasses, but I didn't. But anyway, I decided to go to a place that's just northeast of the Botanical Garden. That's Melanthe School. And as I stepped out of the car, the U.S. flag and the sycamore street trees were waving in the breeze. There's a wrought iron fence around the school, and it warns of potential lead hazards, so stay away from it, basically. The school has that classic architecture. I couldn't find any kind of keystone or anything that said when the school was built, but it's been there for a while. There are two entrances off Shaw Boulevard, and in between those two entrances, the Melanthe Botanical Garden. It has pathways that wind in and out that go past celosia, maiden grasses, blooming liriope, variegated liriope with blue flowers. Roses look good, cannas and lantana. Mums are hugging the old historic kindergarten door. And there's tools and a compost bin. The compost bin had recently cut iris foliage, so who's ever been there working, just they must have been there yesterday because I could tell by the foliage it had just been recently cut. And there's hostas. Obviously, where the hostas are, there used to be a tree. There's no longer a tree there, so the hostas got a little bit of sunburn, but you know, they can survive that. There's fall anemones. There's ferns. Ferns are playing along with the zinnias. The hydrangeas say, we're getting a little bit tired, and they start laying down almost. There's lots of woodies there, everything from viburnums to redwoods to yews. Hybrid spruce among the catmint, Russian sage, and some sedum autumn joy says, hi. And birds were chattering, and I started to get a little bit chilly, so I thought, well, it's probably about time to go. So it was a nice time there at Melanfi School. I think it's Brian Melanfi. And there was a bench there that was dedicated to somebody. I should have written down who it was, but didn't get a chance. My hands were getting too cold. I'm too much of a sissy, I guess. But anyway, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Well, why don't we go ahead and take Ken, and since he's called in already. Hi, Ken.
Hey, Mike. How you doing? I have a Japanese maple that me and my wife put in our front yard about 5 years, 6 years ago, and it's beautiful. Last year, it came up with bagworms, so we had it sprayed. This year, the bagworms came back. So my question is, we had somebody out again, and they didn't spray it. They injected a gel in the trunk of the tree. They said that was better than spraying it. Is that true? And secondly, since these bagworms are back for the second straight year, is it something that we're going to have to fight every year?
Well, that's kind of rare to have Japanese maples with bagworms on them, because they usually, there's nothing there for them to really eat. So that's really, kind of surprising. But anyway, I would say, I don't know how many or how big the tree is or anything else, but very few sprays can penetrate the bags. That's what happens. What happens is the female is in the bag. She lays the eggs. She dies off. The husband, the male, is a moth, more or less. He comes around, and he fertilizes her, and then she lays the eggs in the bag, as I said before. Then she dies off, and then when those eggs hatch, they come crawling out, and then they got to find something to make a new bag. So I'm just really surprised there's something there for them to make a bag with. Because with conifers, I mean, there's needles there. That's what they, that's how they formulate these bags, so that's really a little bit surprising they would have them. And injection, I don't know how that's going to really, how that's going to help. And spraying, definitely, there's very few chemicals, if any, that can penetrate the bag. And again, inside the bag is only the eggs, because the female's already dead. The best time to kill them is just to watch it, since you know there's a problem there. And consequently, maybe those bags that you're seeing are ones from, the previous year or something. But just in the early spring, start watching. And if you start to see little bitty things crawling along the branches, then those can be, an insecticide can be used for those. So does that make sense?
Okay. Yes, it does.
So anything else is going to be pretty much, to be honest, I'm not going to say useless, but useless.
All right. Well, I appreciate your show, and thank you very much for your help.
Sure. Thank you. And I guess we'll go ahead and take a break. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun.
Here comes the sun. It was so bright this morning. Right. Wow. Let's head over to Raymond's yard. Hi, Raymond.
Yeah, good morning, Mike. I just purchased 8 Median grasses. What's the process of planting them in the ground? I mean, how far apart?
What variety? Do you know which variety they are?
They are, begins with the Gracileums. G-R-A-C-I-L-I-M-U-S.
Okay. basically what you want. So are you just growing them for, let's say, an aesthetic ornamental value, or are you trying to do something with them?
Just a kind of privacy.
Oh, privacy. I would probably put them, let's say, maybe 3 to 4 feet apart.
Okay, there's also a fence in my neighbor's yard. I don't want them growing into the fence, so same distance.
Yeah, away from the fence.
Right. Any fertilizer or anything?
Not this time of year, definitely not. And basically no fertilizer until the new growth begins in the probably be late spring, early summer.
Okay, and then when do I cut them down?
When they really start turning brown or when they start shattering. Because some of the time, depending upon the weather and everything else, sometimes they'll just like start breaking apart and then the blades will be all over the place. But what I do is when they start turning brown, I put a bungee cord around them and then just use a hedge trimmer and cut them off at about, let's say eight inches or so.
Okay. Okay, and then keep them watered for the first week or so? Oh, or?
Yeah, definitely, maybe even a little bit longer, especially if we're having wind and we're having no rain whatsoever. I would go maybe even 2 weeks and at least.
Okay, every day?
Yeah, and just soak them pretty well. You don't have to run the water on them for like an hour or something, but just make sure that the root ball is, has plenty of moisture.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Yep, my pleasure. And this is a perfect time of year to be planting, folks, because fall, the ground is warm. That encourages root systems to grow. So whether it's, an ornamental grass, whether it's a tree, whether it's a shrub, whether it's a perennial or anything else, this is the best time of year to do it. Let's head over to Steve's yard now. Hi, Steve.
Morning, Mike. I've been working on trimming up some of my landscaping, and I'm concerned about certain plants that maybe I shouldn't be cutting back now. I have hostas, which I've got a lot of those, and I kind of try and get those cut right down to the ground before we have a frost. How about boxwoods?
I really don't like to prune boxwood going into wintertime because...
Okay.
If we have a severe winter, or let's say even like what happened last year, we had a severe or late fall, it really did some, damage because the tips that had been pruned off, consequently, were now the leaves that were remaining were exposed, and the cold did some damage. So there was a lot of, let's say, browning leaves on the boxwood that had been pruned. I mean, there was some even on boxwood that it weren't pruned, but when you do some pruning, it could make it so from an aesthetic standpoint, you're going to look at stuff that maybe you don't really like.
Okay. How about hydrangeas?
Basically, you're just kind of, are they oversized? Is that why you want to cut them?
I'd like to just shape them a little bit. I've got some bobos and ruby slippers, and they've looked pretty good all year long. But I don't know if I should really cut them back or just wait till spring.
Well, when does those varieties bloom? Do they bloom in the summer?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so if they're summer bloomers, then you can prune them all the way up until... probably, I wouldn't prune them much past mid-April.
Okay.
Or if you start to see, again, our weather, we never know what's going to happen. But if you start to see the leaves open up on them, don't do any pruning after that point.
Okay, how about clethora hummingbird plants?
Virtually any time.
Okay, and viburnums? I've got some Korean spice viburnums.
Again, since they're summer bloomers, you want to go ahead and get any time through the fall, but get any kind of pruning done before any kind of new growth begins in the springtime.
Okay, and the only other thing I have I'm concerned about is hibiscus.
The hardy hibiscus?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the disco bells, the ones with the huge flowers.
Yes.
You can cut those back at any time after, you know, once the foliage starts, turning colors.
Uh-huh. So I can cut those right to the ground, right?
Yep, sure can.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. I appreciate your help.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go over to Mary Ann's. Hi, Mary Ann. Mary Ann, are you there? I don't hear Mary Ann. Let's go over. Let's head over to Carol's. Should we go to Carol?
Hi.
Hi, Carol.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I called you a few weeks ago when it was still beautiful outside, and I told you my my flowering vine here, starts with a C. Now I'm losing my...
Clematis?
Yeah, clematis. You know, I've had this thing for 3-4 years, and it gets some growth, and then it dies all out from the center out. And you said, well, it'll come back. It'll get better as years go on. I got a little upset with it, and I went out and I just cut it all back. I just cut it down to the ground.
Woo.
And I found this little thing in the center of it, this little metal rusted decoration thing that I had hung there. So I ripped it all out. You ought to see this thing today. It's beautiful. So was it that rusty thing in there?
I would not think that that would be the cause of it. I think it's just, the weather and everything else, and just everything, became the right combination for it to recover.
All right. I thought I learned something there, but anyway, thank you for your channel.
Sure.
But it's beautiful today, and I cut it down almost 2 inches from the ground.
Oh, you're kidding.
3 weeks ago.
Wow. So you're just talking foliage, right? You're not talking any flowers?
I did. What do you mean? I took it to, right now I've got beautiful flowers.
Really? In three weeks?
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
But I've had this root's been here since I've had the house, so it's 4 years old, but it grows every year, but it dies from like the center out.
Right.
Almost where that rusty thing was.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you for your channel.
Sure.
I enjoy it.
My pleasure. And now let's head over to Richard's. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Mike, what's the story on chrysanthemums? How long do they last? And, because they're outside of every big box store right now.
Right. Well, the ones that you would buy like that are big grown from a nursery and stuff, they pretty much don't have much of a life beyond when they finish flowering. They're probably not going to have the ability to get themselves established to come back next year.
All right. So, and what's the other kind?
Well, the other kind would be ones that you would buy in the springtime that are in like probably nothing bigger than a 1 gallon pot. They're just leaves. Then you pinch them back so you can have more stems. And the more stems you have, the more flowers you have. But those will be perennials. But ones that are big, massive, huge, they're great for, you're going to get multiple weeks of color out of them. But the ability of them to push out any kind of root system that can get them established to be able to survive a winter is going to be minimal at best.
Okay, but if I plant those now, I'll get a few weeks out of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You'll get, they can take, if it gets really cold, below like 32, it can kind of, send them downhill from an aesthetic standpoint quicker. But, yeah, you can get multiple weeks. I've seen them bloom, depending upon exposure and things like that, all the way up through Thanksgiving.
Really? Okay. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Sure. My pleasure. And let's head to Bill's house. Hi, Bill.
How we doing, Mike?
Very good.
Hey, I got a lilac bush out here that's just gone crazy. I mean, it has lilac flowers on it, something fierce. But 3 weeks ago, it just about didn't have any leaves on it. And the leaves are just as green as all get out now, and I got lilacs on them. I mean, not little lilacs. I mean, big clusters of them, you know. It's crazy, you know. But
yes.
It's hard to believe, you know. People think you're lying when they tell them, well, you got lilacs.
It shows you the quirkiness of our nature and our weather and everything else. Because, I mean, lilacs, for the most part, I don't think there's technically a fall-blooming lilac. But our weather got things twisted around, and that's why it's blooming now as opposed to springtime when it should be blooming.
I've never seen lilacs this time of the year, you know.
Right.
It's crazy, and like you say, it's the weather too. And I mean, it's got to be the weather. I mean, I haven't done anything different. I have it right by a goldfish pond here,
ooh,
and it's blooming something fierce. You know,
sounds great.
Yeah, and they still smell good too. That's what's really.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, I didn't think they'd smell. You know, but yeah, my grandson and I, we picked some for our neighbor yesterday, and boy, they smelled dynamite, you know.
All right. Well, that sounds fantastic.
I appreciate your show, Mike. Hey, thank you.
Sure. Thanks for having me on your show. We do have phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Carl's. Hi, Carl.
Mike, hey, as usual, you have a terrific show. Thank you very much for all the information you give us.
Well, it's my fun.
I have about 30 Buckeye seeds, Buckeye nuts, and they're in the refrigerator right now. I just got them. Can I, first of all, leave them in the refrigerator all winter? Would that be all right? And then, secondly, in the springtime, can I direct seed them right in the ground?
You should be able to plant them straight into the ground, yes. I would. Now, you just have them in the refrigerator. You don't have them in the freezer, right?
In the refrigerator.
Okay, so you can do that, or you can go ahead and plant them now if you want to.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought maybe it might be a little bit too late. All right, I will do that.
No, you can do it now. And you said you had 30 or so, or I can't
remember. Yeah.
I would say 30. Maybe do half of them, and that way leave the other half in the refrigerator so you can kind of see which worked out the best as far as germination.
Sure, and as with everybody else, my biggest problems are the rabbit and the deer, so I have to take that into consideration.
Yeah, but I mean, they're just probably not going to do any above ground growth here in the fall. So they'll just kind of start germinating and send a root system down.
Right. Okay. Then my second question is about calla lilies. I have two in pots that are 4 feet tall and just has some glorious blossoms on them right now. What do I do to overwinter them?
You can just bring them inside and treat them like a house plant.
Do I cut them back?
You don't need to.
Okay, so even though they're 4 foot tall, that would be all right.
Right. Just make sure that, you know, that they get plenty of light, and if any of the foliage or, you know, flowers or whatever start turning headed towards dormancy, then go ahead and just cut those off as needed.
Okay, you mean plenty of light all winter long?
Yes, that would be ideal.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much again for all the great information.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go from Carl's over to Barbara's. Hi, Barbara.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I'm calling about a couple of planters that I have hanging on my back porch. They're huge. I need to bring them in, but they're too big to bring in the house. If I were to cut these down about halfway, some spots that might be 3 feet cutting it off. Will that harm this plant? Will it make it through the winter?
Do you know what kind of plant these actually are?
The sweet potato is the one. That's the one I have to be cut off the most.
Yeah, that's not going to do. you know, cutting that back or anything, or even its ability to survive the wintertime is going to be minimal at best.
Okay. How about the Wandering Jew?
Those are really tough. So you could cut those, but you could cut half that off for sure and bring it inside if you like.
Okay. All right. How about the, it's got a variety of plants in it. How about the angel wing begonia?
It's not going to really look good through the wintertime, but it should be able to survive inside.
Okay. All right, Mike. Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Yeah, it's with the begonias. They're really kind of neat. And, some of the things like the sweet potato vine and the angel wing begonia, you can bring them inside. They just don't, the sweet potato won't do anything. The angel wing begonia is going to end up with just long stems and leaves on it are going to be just at the very, very tip. And if you've cut it off, then you may just end up with stems and not have any new leaf growth at all. So just kind of keep that in mind that might be the situation. Let's go to Paul's yard now. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Mike. Thank you very much for your show and your time. I'm in southeast Missouri. I got a honeybee question for you.
Okay.
This year, I've got close to 100 hives. And this year, one of my hives, and I got three right there together in an urban area, produced a lot of pink honey.
Whoa.
And it's really a sweet, sweet honey, but it is a pink honey. And I extracted honey from it probably in June, and then I did it again in September for the last time, cleaned everything up.
Mm-hmm.
And the same hive produced some more pink honey. The ones right next to it did not produce any.
Wow.
When I took the hive apart every year at this time, I treat them for mites, so I had to take the hive bodies off and treat them. Even the inner part of this hive had pink honey in it. So I was just curious to see what flower they would have been getting into, because I've had them around strawberries before, and you can taste some strawberry in the honey. But this did not taste like any fruit. I was just curious if you had any idea what flowers they would have gotten into.
That's a tough one. My guess, do you have any, like an owl's clover?
Well, bees go out a mile, 2 miles.
Oh, that's true.
I didn't see anything close.
Okay.
I Googled it, and I can't find any information on it at all.
How about trying the University of Missouri Extension Service?
I could do that. I have not done that.
Either that, and then also try the Missouri Botanical Garden, mobot.org, and see what they say about that.
All right. Well, I appreciate your help.
Yep. But that's surprising that only one hive out of, the numerous ones that you have would have this.
Yeah, there's three right there in a row.
Right.
And it's the only one. So they got their own hidden pocket of places to go, I guess. I don't know. But it's interesting. I appreciate your help.
Sure, my pleasure. And let's go now to Eric's. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a couple projects I'm going to be working on. I've got some boxwoods that are probably about 20 years old or so, and they've gotten worn and they had some damage in the inside of them, and I'm going to figure on taking those out hopefully today. And I've got some other boxwoods that I'm going to be putting in. What can I sort of expect as far as like the roots underneath the ones that I'm taking out? Are they really hard to get out at all?
Not too bad, but just don't use a shovel, use a spade. So a spade is a shovel with a square bottom. And just make sure that you have heavy duty shoes and drive the, drive the spade down in there. Let's say, from the furthest extension of the stems coming up out of the ground, go out about 6 more inches and then just drive it in and just keep prying until you can pop the thing up out of the ground.
Okay. And then as far as like preparation of putting the new ones in, I'm probably going to have a lot bigger hole than what I'm going to be putting these new ones in. Can I fill it in with like some topsoil that I've got or some compost also?
I would probably do a blend of, you know, and just make sure you dig the hole three times the diameter of the root ball of the ones that you're planting, but only about 80% as deep. So in other words, the top of the root ball is above the surrounding ground. And then once you get it planted, water it in, and then put a like an inch or two of mulch, you know, for winter protection.
Does it hurt to put any kind of root stimulator around those the new plant?
It's not going to really make that much difference because the ground is warm this time of year, and the roots are going to be stimulated anyway. So I would say, just you know, it's not. If you want to go ahead and do it, that's fine, but don't expect a huge difference as far as their ability to get established.
Yeah, I've just got some of it around the garage, and I've put that around some of them before, so I can go ahead and use some of it.
Oh, sure,
up like that.
Definitely.
And that, I had one other real quick question. Tulip bulbs are okay to put in around November or so in the ground?
Basically, the tulips are late planted, so the last week or so in October and early November is the best time to plant the tulips.
I've got some alum bulbs also. Is that about right at the same time to put those in?
You can put those in a little bit earlier.
Earlier. And then last question, I've got some canises. I always like these. And they're in one of these above ground kind of a box that I've had. And they did pretty good this year. And is it better to leave those canises in the ground, or should I take the bulb, dig it up sometime like in mid-October or so and put them in the basement?
Yeah, if they're in a pot or a container, I would say definitely get them out of that and bring them inside. If they're in the ground, lots of people are having good luck with just leaving them in the ground.
And just trim them back?
Cut them all the way back down and then put a couple inches of mulch over the top of them.
So it's up to me if I want to take them out or just leave them in.
Yeah, if you leave them in the ground, you're taking a chance, because if we have a severe winter, the ground freezes deeper into the soil, then that could, you know, cause the root system, the tubers, you know, to freeze, and then they won't come back. So it's a little bit of a roll of the dice.
And like if I got some crepe myrtle, are those good to trim those back or leave them? They're just sort of unruly right now.
Yeah, I mean, you can prune them, and since they're summer bloomers, you can just make sure you get any kind of pruning that you're going to be doing before the new growth begins next spring.
Okay, and I've got a sort of like a tulip tree or big tulip tree. It's pretty unruly right now. If I cut that back or trim that back now, would that affect the blooms next year?
Yeah. Is this a magnolia or is this a tulip tree?
Yeah, magnolia.
Oh, yes. You're basically, unless it's a summer blooming magnolia, which there are some, you prune them and you're cutting off the flowers for next year.
So it'd be best just to leave that as is right now?
Right, and then prune it after they finish flowering.
In next spring or so.
Right, exactly.
Thank you so much for all the help. I appreciate your show.
Sure, my pleasure. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
To be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade.
I think we won't take any more questions. We'll just listen to music. Let's go over to Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Hi.
I came across a plant yesterday. It was labeled as a Mexican bush sage, and I Googled it, and it was also called Lucantha, maybe Lucanthanum or something like that,
right?
And a salvia, and it said it was perennial in zone 8 through 11, but I think here we're like a 6A or B, correct?
Right. So it's,
can I grow that here, or should I not even try?
Well, it's, I don't know how expensive it was. If you want to spend the money, it's going to be a roll of dice. And even if, let's say, it survives this year, does well, you're happy with it, doesn't necessarily mean in the future it's going to continue to be able to survive our weather, because we don't know what it's going to be like. But yeah,
that's,
it's not one,
because it was full of pollinators.
I mean, that's great, but we're getting kind of near the end of the season where the monarchs, you know, they're still coming by, and there's, you know, some of the bees are still out there, but it's really getting near the end of the season. So as far as pollinating.
Right. I was just thinking for next year, though, but with the suggested zone 8 through 11, I thought, maybe that's not for us.
Yeah, I mean, you'd just be treating it like an annual type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Well, good luck
all
with
right.
that. Yeah. Well, and now let's go to Cindy's yard. Hi, Cindy. Cindy, are you there?
Oh, yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Last year, I bought a small Japanese maple. It's only about 30 inches tall, and I put it in a pot. I'd like to keep it in a pot on my patio, but the pot is small. It's only about 8 inches tall by, you know, like 8 inches across. During the winter, should I bring that in my non-heated garage, or should I bury it in some mulch, or what should I do with it during the winter?
Probably, you know, I would not, you're going to have to protect it some way, and I wouldn't put it in the garage. My tendency would be, you could set it in a garden space and then just surround it with mulch if you want to, or just, the best thing to do would just to be to dig a hole in a garden space and just drop the pot down into the hole, and then leave about the top inch or 2 inches of the pot above the surrounding ground, and then you can pull it back out next spring.
Okay, so leave 2 inches above the ground and just bury the pot then.
Right.
Okay.
That's the ideal.
And then... how big of a pot should I go next year? Can I think that pot will be too small, or should I repot it again in the spring?
I probably would leave it in the same, you know, you said it's 30 inches?
Yeah, it's 30 inches tall, yeah.
Right. I would say it could probably stay in that pot for another season, another year, if you'd like. And if you're going to put it in a new pot, I would, again, you know, use a black plastic nursery pot, because it's, you know, it's warm and everything else. And then you can put it down into a more decorative pot if you want to have something that looks better from an aesthetic standpoint.
Okay, and then I bury it again next year then too?
Yeah, that's probably what I do. And then ultimately, once you get, you know, I've grown them in pots for multiple years, and usually after about the third or fourth year, they don't do so well in a pot, even the larger pots, because, again, we get one or two cold snaps and it does some damage to them. And just because I got tired of just, anyway, I fool around with plant material, let's put it that way. And I decided not to, you know, put it down into a hole in the garden space just to see what would happen, and it didn't survive the winter.
Okay. Yeah, because I see, you know, online, they've got these beautiful Japanese maples in these big pots, and they just look so nice.
Right.
But this area is probably not good for that type of thing, right?
Exactly. Those pictures are from, like, California and places along that line.
Okay.
North Carolina and, you know, stuff like that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure. My pleasure. And I don't think we're going to be able to get another call in. And again, a reminder, your crocus daffodils can be planted this time of year, no problem at all. But if you have tulips, don't plant your tulips until the end of this month. So, best thing to do. Mike Miller, KMWatch Garden Hotline. See you after the news.
Because we know we can be found.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you again, Scott. And looks like Scott's wearing shorts today, too, so he doesn't care about the cold weather. And this is the second hour of the KM West Garden Hotline, which means the tip of the trowel. It's a special on-air recognition for individual group or situation that has made an impression on me during the last week or so. And it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. But right now, we do have some phone lines open. And if you'd like to call, get online, and then we'll be talking to you real soon. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Whether your plants are indoors or out, I'll, you know, share my thoughts with you. And, wow, fall is finally here. It was a little bit cool. Things that you need to be thinking about. How about your herbs? You're growing herbs in a pot. Can you bring them inside? What about those evergreens? Should you be pruning your broadleaf evergreens or your conifers this time of year? How about ground covers or perennials or those cascading house plants that there's too long and you don't have a window that you can hang them, and should you save them or should you just give them a toss or what, you know, just whatever happens to be going on. So, but please remember, my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path for you to take to achieve success. It's just strictly offered for you to consider. And another very important member of the team is Drew. Drew is producing, so he answers the phone. He just needs your first name and put it up on the caller screen. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And besides our Saturday morning get-together, I can come to your plant world for an on-site consultation, which I call a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On my homepage, there's my email address and phone number. My website's not as really as good as it used to be. I'm too lazy. Anyway, today's tip of the trowel is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the trowel goes out to the best of Missouri market, and that's at the Missouri Botanical Garden. I don't know if it's in the garden grounds, but I know a lot of it is on the eastern parking lot. So many of the vendors are there. I don't know, like I said, how many people have booths. For multiple years, I used to broadcast from the Best of Missouri Market, but last few years, I haven't been they haven't wanted me or whatever it happens to be. So tip of the trowel goes out to the Best of Missouri Market, and also it goes out to the Shaw Art Fair. The Shaw Art Fair is basically on a street that runs into, you know, the Botanical Garden. It doesn't run into it directly, but it's on Flora Place. And so there's a lot of artists and various everything from sculptures to jewelry to photography and everything else. So those two events, the Best of Missouri Market and the Shaw Art Fair, get the tip of the trowel this week, and they're both right there together. So you can do one and then go to the other, or you can choose one over the other, or blah, 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 whatever you decide to do. So it's lots of stuff going on in that particular neighborhood. And I think probably, I'm not positive, but Tower Grove Park may have a farmer's fair, farmer's market there as well. So there could be three things within just, you know, four or five blocks of each other. So lots of stuff to do within the city today. So if you have any interest in doing something, why not come on down? Let's see. Why don't we go ahead and take a call? Let's go to Wendy. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Ever since fall started, I can't keep the squirrels out of my pots. I use cayenne pepper. I don't know.
they're going nuts. So, but I mean, sometimes you can, use some, you know, wildlife repellents. And, you know, keep them out that way. But what I do is I just put some larger rocks, and it keeps them out of my pots.
All right. Okay. Yeah, I've done that before, too. It's a problem.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, thanks. Have a good day.
Yeah, I mean, they're ferocious as far as this time of year. And the reason why they're digging in pots is because it's easier than digging in the ground. And so they're depositing various things, and they're not really digging up anything. They're putting some acorns into the pots and things like that. And then a couple years, I've actually had some acorns that the squirrels have planted in my pots that actually have, you know, germinated the following spring. And then I have these little tiny oak trees, and then I kind of sneak around and plant them in parks, which I shouldn't really be doing. But let's see, should we take another call? Sure, let's go to Jill's. Hi, Jill.
Hi there.
Hi.
So I have a blue spruce. It's about 17 years old, and it is appearing to be dying, or at least it's browning the lower limbs on the inside. It doesn't show too much from the outside yet, but it seems to be moving its way up the tree, and I wonder if I need to be doing something to it. Could it be weather-related or end of life?
That's just probably not end of life. It's just a genetic type thing. A lot of the conifers will have a tendency to have no needles on the interior because of the amount of light and everything else. And mm-hmm. So even though you've had it for a long time and haven't noticed it prior to this, it was actually probably happening. It just wasn't as dramatic because but you could end up with, depending upon how long the branch is, where you have an area where the needles are no longer there, no longer viable, and then for a couple feet, and then, again, depending upon how long the branch is, then the end is still looking good, and that's basically what happens. If you even go into a forest with conifers, that's what happens, naturally, and that's what's going to happen in yours.
Okay, so, and because one thought that we had was maybe we should be watering it, but when it's that big, I would think that it's going down to the water table and we don't need to be.
No, you don't have to do any additional watering, especially with conifers, mm-hmm. and because they don't really want a whole lot of water. And if you kind of say, well, here, and start giving them a lot of water that they haven't had prior to that, that could really cause more damage than what you would expect.
Okay. Well, that's an easy answer. Thank you so much.
Sure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. If you have questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Let's go and see what's going on in Jane's yard. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a hardy hydrangea that is bloomed out, and it's kind of, getting out of hand. Can I trim it, or should I trim it, or should I leave it?
When does it bloom?
It just finished blooming probably a week or two ago.
Okay, so it's a summer bloomer, so you can prune it. Basically anytime in the fall, and then you can do, as we're coming out of wintertime, just get your pruning done before any new growth begins in the springtime. So that would probably be, no pruning after, let's say, early April.
Okay. All right. That will work. Thank you so much.
Yep. My pleasure. And now let's go to Leo's yard. Hi, Leo.
Oh, yeah, Mike. I was wondering how late in the season it's still okay to aerate your yard and overseed grass seed.
The seeding, you're really right on the cusp right now. Because, the seed may germinate. Core aeration, you can do that fine. There's nothing, no problem with that. But putting any seed down after, the second week or so in October, the chances of that seed germinating, sending a root system down deep enough into the ground that when we have a severe cold snap, that it won't kill the newly germinated seed. So you're right at the cusp. If you've got the seed already purchased, then I would say go ahead and put it down. But if you're just going out to buy it, I would say don't do that.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mike.
Sure, my pleasure. Yeah, core aeration is fine, but seeding, because, I mean, we just don't know what the weather's going to be like. I mean, they can, you can look at AccuWeather or Weather Channel or all this, and they can predict for, you know, what it's going to be like in 2 weeks. But whether it's that way or not is, you never know. Let's see. Another Barb. Hi, Barb. How are you?
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Couple quick questions. I've got scale on an airplane plan. I can't think of the correct name for them. You got it?
Yeah. Oh, so
I've got scale. I'm moving my plants inside, and I see a little bit of scale on my airplane plants. I know to try to clean it off with a soapy Q-tip, but can I spray anything on them to make sure I haven't missed anything?
If you're going to spray anything, scale is a tough insect to control because you have to suffocate it. So you have to go to your favorite garden center and get light summer weight horticultural, you know, dormant oil, basically.
And
suffocate it that way. And then some plants, because it just, let's say the structural nature of their foliage, they don't do so well with that kind of, you know, situation. So I would, you know, if you want to try it, go ahead and get the, you know, the summer weight horticultural oil. Don't spray it on all of it. Just spray it in a couple spots and see if any damage is done.
Yeah, it's just really hard to make sure you saw every one on those type plants.
Oh, absolutely. They could be on the stems. They can be on the leaves. They can be on the, you know, the, let's say the babies that come shooting out.
Yeah, hard to see. Other question. I have autumn glory clematis covering about half of my Japanese maple that's about 12 years old. Do I rip that off now before the winter?
Well, it's still flowering, isn't it?
No, they're about done flowering. Okay. Most of all of mine are dead flowering. But will it hurt to leave it on there for the winter, or do I rip it off?
No, I mean, you can leave it on for the winter. It won't hurt anything. But if you don't want it, it's very invasive and aggressive, and it can certainly, you know, do some damage to your Japanese maple.
That's my question. Yeah, I'd rather have the maple. I've got a lot of the clematis all over the 3 acres. I know it's invasive.
Oh.
Other question. I know you haven't got a lot of time.
Oh, that's okay.
My burning glory. Burning bushes, yes. I've got about 42 of those across one end of my lot. Do I trim them? They're about 10 years old, maybe. Do I have them trimmed in the fall or the winter? Spring.
It doesn't matter because you're really not growing them for flowers. So
no,
you're growing them basically for foliage. So consequently,
really,
I mean, you can prune them anytime from the, you know, have they already turned color?
And
drop their leaves. So you can prune them basically now all the way up until any kind of new growth begins in the springtime. I probably wouldn't prune after that.
Okay. Probably do it in the spring. They haven't dropped leaves yet, and they've still got a lot of color.
Oh, good. Then just enjoy them.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Have a good day.
You do the very same thing. And let's go and see what's going on in John's yard. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm just calling about the call that was in the first hour, the guy from Southeast Missouri with the honeybees, and he had pink honey.
Yeah.
I kind of have a hunch on that. I feed the hummingbirds here at my house, and I make my own nectar, and it's it doesn't have any dye in it, and it's just sugar and water and a preservative in there. Well, hummingbird feeders some years get emptied by honeybees.
Uh-huh.
They latch onto it and start feeding it, and the hummingbirds can't even hardly get in there. So my hunch is that that particular hive that's making pink honey may very well be honeybees that are feeding from somebody's hummingbird feeder that has the commercial nectar that they sell that has a red dye in it.
Oh, interesting.
That's kind of an unnatural color for honey to be red.
Yes.
So I thought I would add that in there if he's still listening. I think that's a pretty good idea why his honey is pink.
Well, that's a good, you know, that's very good. I didn't, you know, think of that, but that makes good sense.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's all I had.
All right. Well, great.
Thank
well,
you
thanks.
For the show.
Yep. I enjoy, you know, somebody that can offer some insight. And now, how about Ron's yard? How are you, Ron?
Yes. Is it too early to cut back asparagus?
No, you can do it now.
Okay, I got one more question. When I lived in Webster, they had some trees, huge trees, must have been hundreds of years old, and they called them tulip trees. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, they're really huge trees.
What's the right name? Is that it, tulip tree?
Well, I mean, you can look up tulip tree. I forget what the genus and species are. I want to say it's alocasius, but I don't think, you know, that's really the right one. So just go online and put tulip tree, and you're talking about the one that has kind of the orange flower that's, you know, sits up.
It's in the spring.
Yeah.
Right. It's in the spring.
Right, exactly.
But they're huge. It's in the old neighborhoods of Webster.
Right. And I mean, throughout
the native to Missouri?
I don't think it's native. I think it might be... But it's naturalized, so it does grow here pretty darn well.
It's softwood, too, isn't it?
It's not too bad. I mean, there's not going to be, you know, a lot of storm damage as far as a result. A lot of people don't want to do softwood like a silver maple because of potential storm damage. But it's not really, a real softwood type thing.
Is it like poplar?
Sort of, and I tell you what, too, it's very attractive to aphids. So a lot of times, you know, I lived in Webster myself. I didn't have a tulip tree over my driveway or house or whatever. But since the aphids are there, then when the aphids go to the bathroom, then they drop stuff, and it makes the surfaces, your cars, your driveway, your sidewalk sticky.
I was always wondering what the right name for that was. That's what the people in Webster call them, tulip trees.
Right. I mean, that is a common name. And again, you can go to just Missouri Botanical Garden website and just put tulip tree in. Now, it might pull up some magnolias, but that's not what you're looking for.
Right. No, these get beautiful blooms on them
right.
in the spring. So.
Right.
They almost look like orchids instead of tulips. So.
Yeah, with an orange and green color to the flower.
Yeah, really pretty. All right, thank you, Mike.
All right. Yep, sorry I couldn't think of the genus.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll keep calling them tulip trees.
Well, you can look it up online. It's pretty easy
to
do.
Yeah, I will. Well, I know how to do that. Thank you.
All right. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages. Just remember, folks, if you live across the street from a park or you have larger trees in your yard, don't let the leaves pile up on top of your lawn or even on top of some of your perennials or other, you know, other plant materials, because it can really create a fungus problem. We live across the street from Christie Park, and our street trees, we've got sugar maples. And one of the sugar maples is really dropping a whole lot of leaves. And, you know, with this wind, we're starting to get some of the leaves. We're in the northeast corner of the park, so all the winds from the southwest blow the leaves into our yards. And so it's a battle against the leaves because... You let it pile up, and it creates too much humidity, and then you end up with a fungus problem. And that can happen with whether you've got a cool season lawn, fescues or bluegrasses, or a warm season lawn, zoysia. So just watch out for piling up leaves in your landscape. Let's go over to Barbara's. Hi, Barbara.
Got a question. Never have had this problem before, but we live like on 3 acres, and it's a wooded area, huge trees. And all of a sudden this year, the trees are dropping green leaves, which we've never had before and just don't understand why, but they're dropping green leaves. So that's my question. Any idea why?
Yeah, because we've had some really dry spells, and the trees are just going, I can't support all you leaves, so that it's sloughing some of them off.
Okay, so nothing wrong with the trees, it's just the weather.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep.
You have a good day.
You do the very same thing. And now let's head to Steve's. Hi, Steve.
Hi there.
Hi.
Is it too late to put down anything to kill grubs?
Well, you can kill the grubs. It's probably not too late, but you're right on the cusp, because their migration and eating and everything else is going to, once the soil temperatures start cooling down, they're kind of just, stuck. And so they're not going to be, controlling wise is going to be somewhat iffy.
Okay. I didn't know. I think that's what I had. I know I got grubs, but when I pinch the grass and I can just pull it up, with just two fingers, that's what I thought it was grubs.
Well, it could be. I mean, I wouldn't, my tendency would be toward kind of not do it this time of year and wait till next May and do it, because they're going to be up closer to the surface, and it's going to be more effective.
Okay. Will that grass come back? It's zoysia grass.
Usually grubs don't do damage to zoysia.
The zoysia
root system is a little bit too tough for them. They like bluegrass.
Uh-huh.
That's the main lawn that they do damage to. They don't even do that much damage to fescue. They do some, but with zoysia, I don't think you've got a grub problem.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes a big difference too, doesn't it?
Yes.
What do you think it could be?
Well, it's tough to say. Are the areas that you're saying you pull it up, are they turning brown?
Yeah.
Is it this time of year, or was it earlier in the season?
It was a little earlier. It was a small spot, but now it's kind of like got over the whole yard. Trying to spread over the whole yard.
Yeah, my guess is it's a type of fungus.
Okay.
So it's not insect related at all.
Did a person put down a fungicide or something now? Or
no, don't bother now. Just next year when it starts greening up, apply the fungicide at that point. Don't do it before you start to see it greening.
Okay. Thank you very much, then.
Sure, my pleasure. And Melinda, how are you today?
Good. I'm just seeing a beautiful bird go by my house, so it's kind of fun and makes you smile. So how are you today?
Very good.
Good. I've got a question for you, Mike, and thank you again for your educational show. It's really interesting. We are talking about mulching this time of year. We have redid a lot of our landscape. We got some perennials out there, and we would like to maybe mulch a little bit. Is this a bad time of year to go ahead and mulch? What do you think?
No, this is a good time of year.
Okay. All right. And then how many inches of mulch is adequate for a yard?
It depends. On woody plant materials, any place between, let's say, 3 and 4 inches is a maximum.
Okay.
And around perennials, 1 to 2 inches, depending upon the type of perennial and things like that.
Okay. Do you prefer, the triple grounds are better for the soil, correct?
Well, they just break down quicker. That's the only difference. They all break down. They all add, good qualities, to the soil. So it's just one will go, let's say, melt down faster than the other.
Okay, and that's okay. And then we have a Japanese maple. We also have a lilac bush. It's losing almost all its leaves. Something's getting to it. Is neem oil, do you think, sufficient to put on this time of year?
Without knowing what it is, I would say just don't spray for the sake of spraying.
Oh, okay.
Find out what the problem is. And so you're saying the lilac and the Japanese maple both are losing leaves? Are they in close proximity?
They're within 30 feet of each other.
Oh, so they're not really close.
Right. And we're on the lake in Lake St. Louis. So I don't know if this is, you know, we have those little tiny red mites. We had them everywhere at the beginning of spring. So I don't know if that would have caused it.
No, those clover mites really are not really going to cause leaf drop.
Okay. Is there someone I can call or you can come out or we can, what do you suggest?
Well, I would say go to your favorite garden center and see what, you know, if you want to.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you so much. Okay. And you have a wonderful day.
Yes, my pleasure. And so I wouldn't bother probably, you know, going to your favorite garden center now, but I would say next spring, if you know, maybe take a couple of leaves from both plants and let them take a look at it, and, you know, with a you know stem branch, and see if there's something there that they you know that is obvious and noticeable. And let's see, where should we go now? Let's go over to Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hi, I have a question. My grandson has a large yard, and it's got nothing in it. He had to cut down a big elm with galls on it. So can you recommend two large trees that he could plant that would be hardy and colorful? You have a two favorites?
Well, I mean, it really depends. He can't really plant right where the you know the original tree that he had taken out.
No, he's not going to do that. He'll plant on the edge of his yard.
Okay. And
but
so
I
go ahead.
I know trees get a big spread, so they have to be pretty far apart. But do you have a favorite tree that's you love and is colorful and hardy?
Well, any of the, you know, I like the, you know, the maples are, you know, my favorite. I grew up on Maple Lane in Ellisville, so I don't like the silver maples that we had there, but any of the red maples, he could take a look at those to give him some fall color from the, you know, from that perspective.
Okay. Did Ann say something about Old Glory or something, Mary? No. Okay. So you think maples would be the best?
Well, it's not necessarily the best. I mean, if I was going to do an oak, I'd do a white oak versus a red oak. So, I mean, there's bald cypress. There's all kinds of trees that he could pick from.
Okay, I guess.
Pretty foliage in the fall.
What, Mary?
Pretty foliage
in the fall.
Okay, so then I would look at the red maples.
Red maple. Okay, thank you.
Yep. And good luck with that. And make sure that if he does the installation, big, you know, wide hole, but the top of the root ball above the surrounding ground, that's really kind of crucial. And let's see, how are you doing, Paul?
Yeah, good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I have problems with voles, you know, B-O-L-B-E-S.
Right.
And, wondering or something you could recommend something. I mean, I have been using some commercial poison, but I'm not, you know, just little pellets, but I'm not really sure if there's anything else we could do.
Well, find out where they're living. They usually live under shrubs. You'll see a small, you know, a hole, like a 2-inch hole or something like that, and put the poison right there for the, you know, to get them.
Yeah, there's holes everywhere up the yard, I must say. You know, I filled in a bunch of them, and then on the ones that I was kind of waiting to see if I had any new ones, but that's basically what I'm doing is just putting those pellets down in those little holes.
Yeah, holes in the middle of the yard, that's not necessarily them, not where they're living. They live underneath shrubs. They live underneath, let's say, porches, concrete, things like that. So look in those particular locations to see if you see any holes there, and then take a broomstick or a wire or something and stick it down in there to make sure that it goes down at least a couple inches to find out if that's really one that's functional. And then,
I've been looking for new holes. I mean, I've got them all marked, the old ones, and then that I've been putting the poison in. And then my logic was, if I had new holes, they were moving on, or it'd be more likely to put the poison in those holes.
Well, I'm just saying that they live in certain spots. They don't necessarily move around and dig new holes. So they live one place. They come out of that place where they live. Then they go do the other damage that they're going to be doing to whatever it happens, wherever it happens to be. But then they'll go back to the same hole to to hibernate, to sleep, to whatever, to have babies.
Okay. So just keep treating the holes, I guess.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, and go, try to find out where their home is so you can kill them, as opposed to trying to go where they've actually just come to eat or to do, let's say, potential damage. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages. I come in late at night, and in the morning I just lay in bed. When you're cutting your cool season lawn this time of year, you want to set your mower a little bit higher. Your zoysia's headed towards dormancy, so you're going to set your mower a little bit closer. So your zoysia and fescue, your bluegrass and your fescue, set your mower at about 4.5 inches. And with your zoysia, which is not turning brown yet, it's starting to turn brown, but you're going to set it about 3.5 inches. So mowing at the correct height is going to be to the advantage of your lawn just in general. Let's head over to Rich's yard. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
There was a gentleman that called about what he thought was grubs in the zoysia yard.
Right.
Yeah, there's a beetle called the billbug, and their grubs eat the roots of the zoysia grass.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, and it'll wipe out your entire yard.
So billbug?
Yeah, billbug.
Right.
And so, the zoysia grass, like you said, is almost going into dormancy, so the grubex that you put down is systemic, so it's not going to do any good to put any grubex down, now, because...
Right.
You pretty much have to wait till the spring.
Yeah, until there's, I completely agree. Well, thanks for the billbug information.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
And now let's go to Jim's yard. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Mike. I plant impatiens in a bed every year, and I usually then stick like a large pot with them in there also, just to give it some more height.
Sure.
And I plant impatiens in different pots away from that area every year, and they've always done really well. Well, this year, I fertilized my yard about a month ago, and a week later, all of the impatiens started just dropping their flowers and leaves and everything, and just leaving real spindly stems. They still had buds on them, but it looks like somebody just stripped all the foliage and everything off. And where the bed is and where my other pots are that, they're probably about 40 feet away, they did the same thing. And I was wondering, at first I thought, well, maybe the fertilizer did it, but the ones that are away from the grass that didn't get anything like that did the same thing. Any idea what that might have been?
Wow, and you've had success growing the impatiens, obviously, for multiple years prior to this.
Yeah, it was, and I noticed that, and I used a brand name potting soil that I do every year, but I noticed this year, even the one in pots, usually they get so full I've got to trim them. And usually like two or three times a season, I have to trim them, the ones in the pot.
Right.
And this year, not once did I do that. And also, I just kind of ripped them out of the pot this time or a couple days ago. And I noticed that the root system was only about maybe a quarter of the way down.
Ooh.
And where normally it's so root bound, you lift it out, you know, and the whole pot of dirt, everything comes out.
Right.
I don't know if maybe I just got a, I don't know what that was, but I thought maybe you might know.
My guess is it has to be related, especially since it's such a diverse distance and everything else, related to the weather, more so than anything else.
That's kind of what I think, too. This has been a really strange year.
Yes.
I think, but okay. I thought maybe I was missing something, but, that's pretty much all I had, except for one last, comment. I heard about the guy that was having issues with the voles.
Right.
And I had the same issue. But what I did was place just a regular mouse trap on a run, you know, somewhere where like a cat or a dog can't get to it. And I caught over, I think, 12 or 13 of them that way.
Wow. I agree. Yeah. The mouse traps, and put peanut butter on the mouse trap. That's very attractive to the voles.
Yeah, yeah. So that does work pretty well.
Right.
Anyway, that's all I have, Mike. Thanks a lot.
Sure, my pleasure. And Carol, how are you?
Just fine. Thank you. I have a couple quick ones. When is the best time to prune Annabelle hydrangea? And if so, if it's now, how far down do I prune it?
I would just cut the flowers off. I wouldn't cut any more off than that.
Okay. Okay. And then my couple other little questions is, if I'm not going to seed, is it best to aerate in the spring or in the fall?
Fall is a good time for core aeration if you have a cool season lawn.
Okay, I have a bluegrass.
Okay, so basically sometime from mid-August up until, let's say, this time of year.
Okay. And then, I forgot the other one. So, okay, thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure. And Barbara, we're not going to be able to get to you, or Matt or Guy, either one. So, wow, this morning, the cool temperatures and everything else are, you know, kind of sending us down to fall finally. Just remember, certain things don't do unless you get a soil test done. Like, so often we've had calls over the years where people have said, my contractor's putting lime down on my lawn. And unless you've had a soil test that indicates that your soil is acidic, you do not put, or overly acidic. In other words, let's say lower than like maybe 6.1. If it's lower than that, then an application of lime would be effective, would be helpful. But if it's not, you know, that low, not that acidic, do not put lime down just routinely on your lawn, because it's going to cause more trouble than it's going to do good. Also, with a soil test indicates, especially if you have a contractor or you yourself have used the same fertilizer year after year after year after year, you could have extreme levels of phosphorus and potassium in your soil, and that could be detrimental to whatever you're trying to grow. And that includes woody plant material, that includes lawn, perennials, ground covers, and everything else. So soil tests are important. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. See you next week.
My logic was, if I had dew holes, they were moving on, or, you know, it'd be more likely to put the poison in those holes, you know.
Well, I'm just saying that they live in certain spots. They don't necessarily move around and dig new holes. So they live one place, they come out of that place where they live, then they go do the, you know, other damage that they're going to be doing to whatever it happens, wherever it happens to be. But then they'll go back to the same hole to, you know, to hibernate, to sleep, to whatever, to have babies.
Okay. So just keep treating the holes, I guess.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, and go, you know, try to find out where their home is so you can kill them, as opposed to trying to go where they've actually just come to eat or to do, let's say, potential damage. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages. I come in late at night, and in the morning I just lay in bed. When you're cutting your cool season lawn this time of year, you want to set your mower a little bit higher. Your zoysia's headed towards dormancy, so you're going to set your mower a little bit closer. So your zoysia and fescue, your bluegrass and your fescue, set your mower at about 4.5 inches. And with your zoysia, which is not turning brown yet, it's starting to turn brown, but you're going to set it about 3.5 inches. So mowing at the correct height is going to be to the advantage of your lawn just in general. Let's head over to Rich's yard. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
There was a gentleman that called about what he thought was grubs in the zoysia yard.
Right.
Yeah, there's a beetle called the billbug, and their grubs eat the roots of the zoysia grass.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, and it'll wipe out your entire yard.
So, billbug?
Yeah, billbug.
Right.
And so, you know, the zoysia grass, like you said, is almost going into dormancy. So the Grubex that you put down is systemic, so it's not going to do any good to put any Grubex down, you know, now because...
Right.
You pretty much have to wait till the spring.
Yeah, until there's, you know, I completely agree. Well, thanks for the billbug information.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
And now let's go to Jim's yard. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Mike. Hey, I plant impatiens in a bed every year, and I usually then stick like a large pot with them in there also just to give it some more height.
Sure.
And I plant impatiens in different pots away from that area every year, and they've always done really well. Well, this year, I fertilized my yard about, a month ago. And a week later, all of the impatiens started just dropping their flowers and just get and leaves and everything, and just leaving real spindly stems. They still had buds on them, but it looks like somebody just stripped all the foliage and everything off. And where the bed is and where my other pots are that, you know, they're probably about 40 feet away. They did the same thing. And I was wondering, at first I thought, well, maybe the fertilizer did it. But the ones that are away from the grass that didn't get anything like that did the same thing. Any idea what that might have been?
Wow. And you've had success growing the impatiens obviously for multiple years prior to this.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. And I noticed that, and I used a brand name potting soil that I do every year. But I noticed this year, even the one in pots, usually they get so full, I've got to trim them. And usually like two or three times a season, I have to trim them, the ones in the pot.
Right.
And this year, not once did I do that. And, also I just kind of ripped them out of the pot this time, or a couple days ago. And I noticed that the root system was only about maybe a quarter of the way down.
Ooh.
And where normally it's so root bound, you lift it out, you know, and the whole pot of dirt, everything comes out.
Right.
I don't know if maybe I just got a, I don't know what that was, but I thought maybe you might know.
My guess is it has to be related, especially since it's such a diverse distance and everything else, related to the weather, more
yeah,
so than anything else.
That's kind of what I think, too. This has been a really strange year.
Yes.
I think, but okay. I thought maybe I was missing something, but, yeah, that's,
that's pretty much all I had, except for one last comment. I heard about the guy that was having issues with the voles.
Right.
And I had the same issue. But what I did was place just a regular mouse trap on a run, you know, somewhere where like a cat or a dog can't get to it. And I caught over, I think, 12 or 13 of them that way.
Wow. I agree. Yeah. The mouse traps, and put peanut butter on the mouse trap. That's very attractive to the voles.
Yeah, yeah. So that does work pretty well.
Right.
Anyway, that's all I have, Mike. Thanks a lot.
Sure, my pleasure. And Carol, how are you?
Just fine. Thank you. I have a couple quick ones. When is the best time to prune Annabelle hydrangea? And if so, if it's now, how far down do I prune it?
I would just cut the flowers off. I wouldn't cut any more off than that.
Okay. Okay, and then my couple other little questions is, if I'm not going to seed, is it best to aerate in the spring or in the fall?
Fall is a good time for core aeration if you have a cool season lawn.
Okay, I have a bluegrass.
Okay, so basically sometime from mid-August up until, let's say, this time of year.
Okay, and then... okay, I forgot the other one. So, okay, thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure. And Barbara, we're not going to be able to get to you, or Matt or Guy, either one. So, wow, this morning, the cool temperatures and everything else are, you know, kind of sending us down to fall finally. Just remember, certain things don't do unless you get a soil test done. Like, so often we've had calls over the years where people have said, my contractor's putting lime down on my lawn, and unless you've had a soil test that indicates that your soil is acidic, you do not put, or overly acidic. In other words, let's say lower than like maybe 6.1. If it's lower than that, then... an application of lime would be effective, would be helpful. But if it's not, you know, that low, not that acidic, do not put lime down just routinely on your lawn, because it's going to cause more trouble than it's going to do good. Also, with a soil test indicates, especially if you have a contractor or you yourself have used the same fertilizer year after year after year after year, you could have extreme levels of phosphorus and potassium in your soil, and that could be detrimental to whatever you're trying to grow. And that includes woody plant material, that includes lawn, perennials, ground covers, and everything else. So soil tests are important. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline. See you next week.